but I don't know about all the vendors, but it was something that I was going to go with to see once I had some time here, probably early next week, so.
But one other last question I had about the close to the documentation that the external auditors are still looking for, mm-hmm. is whether the lack of documentation is is confined to one, with the 20% is confined to one department, or it's just several departments?
I think it's pretty much in multiple departments, the 20%
yeah,
that's still there.
This issue of a delay in response, it's pretty much across the board.
Yeah.
It's not just one department.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, moving along. We've had multiple meetings. We meet with the external auditors every Tuesday morning, and then we meet with Meeks to give him an update as to how what they have. Some of the on page 3 of the report, I have some of the findings that have already come up from the external auditors that management has agreed to. This is a listing of those. What the process is from here is that the external auditors that are here document these and then provide that to the Office of the Auditor General. The OAG then determines whether or not that issue or combination of issues is immaterial or material. Okay, so what I have tried to do here is, based on the findings and material that they've provided me, I've tried to put them into some buckets. Now, this is just me putting this, just to give you kind of some guidance as to here as to what I think might happen. This is not what they have said will happen in terms of whether it's going to be material or immaterial. The other premise that I'd like to say about this is that most, if not all, of this was from the prior administration. It was not items found based on the current administration's workings. For example, the car allowance for President Polk's car didn't have W-2 information in there, and that was from the prior administration. Police reports, we had a $5 charge, for example, on police reports, and the law says we can't not charge anything but the cost of a piece of paper and the ink that goes on there, so we had to change that. And a couple of these management has already changed, so we've already been very proactive in terms of getting these items fixed. Moving on, the IT external audit, we had an opening conference, which C. Cole was there along with Ted Landon, myself, and a couple other individuals, just to basically go over the scope and information in regards to that audit. Now, give you some information on the internal audit area. In 2000, the 2011 internal audit plan was approved by President Watson on June 30th, as per the Fiscal Control and Internal Auditing Act. We had some meetings prior to that and determined that the plan needed to be very aggressive. So based on that, we needed to bring in a couple of extra help individuals. Those individuals are actually here today, which I'll point out, Rudy Tracy and Michelle Wilson. Sorry. I've also have one other individual that came in the internal audit area. She's a student. She works at the Honors College. Her name is Deborah Wilborn. She could not be here today. So she's also helping us with some infrastructure items and such, and give you a little bit more information on that later. We have completed a project regarding employee tuition waivers, and we've also provided some consulting activities surrounding the Fresh Start program. And also some policy changes in regards to president's authority level, purchasing cards, the police arrest reports, and such. We've also completed one other audit. It's in contracts, but we have not issued the formal report yet. We are about almost ready to do that. So probably next week or the week after, we'll have that report issued. We are in process with a police services audit, a sponsored programs audit, and we just started a governance, risk, and compliance audit, which covers the entire university, including ethics, board regulations, and such. I won't go through the quarter two internal audits planned, but some of that includes accounts payable, financial reporting. We really want to hit the financial reporting area, and determine how the process is there. We've also spoken to C. Cole about some of the initiatives that she is doing in regards to the IT area, and we have begun the process of getting involved with her up front in some of these system upgrades and such to provide some consulting information as well as to try to eliminate having to do an audit right after something has been done. We can wait a little bit more time if we look at the internal control structure prior as opposed to after. On page five, what you have in front of you is Appendix A or 1. That is the certification memo that had to be put in place by September 30th to per the Fiscal Internal Control Act. That basically is just a synopsis of the activity from the prior external auditor in regards to what he did, how he did it, and such. And that was signed by President Watson and actually given to the appropriate individuals 2 months early. One of the other things, we touched upon the continuous monitoring, but one of the other things that I'm starting the process of looking into is internal audit software. Something that basically will make internal audit automated instead of manual, so that you can do work papers, work programs, everything would be basically online through a web-based type of a product where we would have audit reports. And I mean, basically, it automates the whole function of internal audit. It would make us a lot more efficient and effective at doing our jobs and give us more time to actually audit than to be preparing reports. So that's something that I'm looking at and something that I will also be communicating to C. Cole because it's something new on my plate as well. There's an initiative at the college or university in regards to performance indicators. A couple that we have decided to put in place an internal audit is going to be, I think, the one easiest one to really look at is the percent customer satisfaction. And what that is after each audit, as the chief, I will be sending out a questionnaire to various individuals that were included in the audit from the auditee perspective and ask them to answer about 9 questions and then give us a rating as to how we did. And that KPI we just started. I finished up one audit already that we've had that, and we actually had pretty good ratings from the individuals that came in. So next report, audit report, I will have a little bit more synopsis on some of these key performance indicators. Also, going to try to track some dollar value of savings potential as we do audits. If there's ways that I can actually track what we can potentially save the university, we will do so. Obviously, we want to try to be a value-added function as opposed to a cost function. So therefore, if I can show or we can show that we have $1 million worth of savings, for example, it'll show that we are value-added because we're not costing the university as much as we're saving. So that's one of my goals, is to try and get it out that way. A couple other side notes, stuff that's not in there. One of the things that came up with President Watson, I think it was a week or two ago, was having internal audit get involved in the student town meetings. It's one of the initiatives that I think is something that's going to be very valuable. At least letting the student body know that we're here, giving them some information about what internal audit does and what we are here to do and how we can provide support to them. So that's something that's going to be, I think we're going to be starting to do that next month in October.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
Is there any mechanism by which the faculty and maybe soon to be student body, they have information that's posted about the internal audit function where they know that there is some place where they could if they have if there is a claim of mismanagement or abuse, that they can make that claim to our internal audit function?
We're working on that.
Right.
That's one of the things that I wanted to do was build a website for internal audit.
Mm-hmm. Where claims could be made.
Yes, exactly. And also would be an informational source for them as well to, you know, get more information about what internal audit is, what our goals are, all that kind of information. And that's something that right. I have already begun the process with C. Cole in terms of getting some instruction on how to do that. And then with Deborah Wilborn, who's the student, she will be able to help populate, and that's one of the initiatives I'm going to have her help with is getting this website out and running, hopefully this quarter.
I mean, as part of sort of the governance project, we ought to to make sure that faculty and students know that we have this resource that can address, you know, claims of any irregularity.
Right. There's also the hotline that they can call. Well, that's, yeah, the whistleblower hotline is also in place, but that's external.
Okay.
So this is just, you're right, this would just be another source for people to come to and understand what internal audit is.
Okay.
So, and we'll have our phone number on that and give them kind of an informational area as how to do that. Just on a side note also, this is something that I hope is going to be good for the university, because I was just elected as a board member of the Chicago Chapter of Institute of Internal Auditors, which means that now we can have a voice there as part of the board. I think that's going to be very good in terms of that as well. Okay.
Excuse me.
Yes.
As far as the website concerned, mm-hmm. I think that's a really good thing, because it'll also give accountability and transparency. And because we're trying to improve the image of the school, people being able to log on and see those things, and it would bring to a positive image for Chicago State University. So I think that's vital to have that information there.
I very much agree. Very much agree. And that's also why I think it was a great idea for us to get involved at these student town hall meetings, because that's just another avenue of education for people to know who we are and what we do.
Thank you.
Okay. On page 7 and 8 is just a synopsis of the audit plan activity that we had. We've had a number of special projects that came into place. We've had to combine some audits. We've had to move some audits around. And this is just a general synopsis that I won't go over unless there's any specific questions. Going to page 12, this is the internal audit recommendation status and aging. As you know, we've only been here for a couple of months, so we just started getting our feet wet. We've done a lot of infrastructure building, and we've also started some audits, and we're in the process of, I think, 3 or 4 audits right now. It just wasn't complete by the time of the board meeting. So we did issue one report in regards to employee tuition waivers, and what I've done here is provided a synopsis of those issues that were on that report. Rather than go through them completely, was there any questions on that piece? External audit, same thing on page 14. This was from the external audit from last year. To show some progress of what management has done, there was a prior open of 12 issues. Management has succeeded in closing 2 of those during the last couple of months. So therefore, we still have 10 that are open. And some of those are basically ones that are not going to go away. They're going to be repeats because of the fact that it's just the nature of the beast. There's a couple of them there that we're not going to get rid of unless there's some major changes in legislation and such. But what I've done here is there's 5 high material findings that they identified, and I've provided a synopsis on the audit observation and the management response and where they are to date, whether it was complete or not. Because most of these points were comprised of 3, 5, 6, or 7 different findings in the issue. So what it is I've basically given you a synopsis of whether it was that point is complete and whether another point is not. So for example, one of them here, there's 3 points to the issue. 2 of them are complete, but management's still working on a 3rd one. So the overall audit point is not complete yet. And that basically concludes the internal audit synopsis at this point. If you have any questions,
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I applaud the use of student support in the audit function. It's a great opportunity for a student and an opportunity for a training opportunity for a student and a good resource for your team.
Yeah, I'd like to try to have that be a rolling thing that we do every semester, depending on funding and such. But
okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Sylvia Gist, Dean of the College of Education, which houses the Textbook and Learning Materials Project.
And I'm Carol Carson Warner, the Executive Director of the Textbooks and Learning Materials Program, Ghana. To date, and I did submit a report in advance, but as of today, we have received the third installment in the incremental funding for this grant on September the 22nd. It brings us up to $7,366,000, approximately 56% of the total award, which will be given over the three-year period. The major activities under this grant is the reprinting of the KG1 and 2 textbooks, or workbooks, actually, and teacher's guides. We are currently in the process of printing 2,569,000 workbooks and teacher's guides. The contracts were finalized in June. The first initial installment was sent to the printer, which is Buck Press in Ghana, of 40%. And I've gone to Ghana and visited with Buck Press, the Ghana Education Services. We put in quality controls for the actual printing or the editing of the workbooks. We've also put in an approval process on who has to approve prior to printing, and we discussed the printing schedule. Initially, we thought everything would be finalized by August the 30th, but we have found that in the subsequent meeting, Mr. Gerald Knox, my financial manager, went to Ghana in late August, and it was determined that we all really needed a six-week extension. As of yesterday, Buck Press indicates that they're on schedule and we should be finished by October the 15th with this initial print. It has been further determined through our partnerships with USAID Ghana, which is a first, that the actual embassy, the USAID mission in Ghana is in the U.S. Embassy in Ghana, and they've are going to provide funds for the distribution in approximately $1 million, in the estimated cost of $1 million. And this is the first. I think it is, it's worth noting that that partnership has been solidified between Chicago State University and the mission in Ghana, because it had never worked before. But once they decided determined that they would pay for the distribution of funds, everyone seems to be very happy. I met with the USAID partners in Washington on September the 9th, and they seem to be very pleased with the relationships that are being built. We are also in the process of getting ready for printing 9 titles for grades 1 through 3. We're in the editing phase at this point. Once the editing phase is finalized, we will submit the final drafts to USAID Mission Education Officers and the USAID Washington Office. Once approved, we'll go into the procurement process. The last time we met, we discussed the evaluation, which was our major activity during the summer of the TLMs, actually looking at the impact of the use of the TLMs on the ground. We have completed phase one, which is very specifically the collection of data. Under the leadership of Dr. Gahungu, who is a faculty member in the College of Education, we brought together 20 researchers. Our researchers consist of 2 vice chancellors in Ghana, one at the University of Cape Coast and the other at the University of Education, Winneba. And it is, just so that you understand, that vice chancellors are presidents of universities. They're equivalent to presidents in the United States. And these individuals, along with a researcher from the Ghana Education Service, we had six Chicago State University students who were trained as field researchers, and they spent a month in Ghana on the ground collecting data, compiling data, the initial compilation of data. They also were involved in some cultural enrichment activities because they were in this foreign place. We had one undergraduate, well, we had Ghanaian partners or counterparts to our students as well. There were six of them. One was an undergraduate student and three graduate students and two university researchers who were also trained as field researchers. Those individuals made up our team, and there were a total of 20 individuals. From vice chancellors, who are presidents of the universities in Ghana, through students, and the work was done. And again, I'd like to thank Dr. Gist, and she's sitting here with me, but I thank her for her support and her guidance. One of the things about this grant is this grant not only builds capacity in Ghana and provides workbooks and textbooks to the children and teachers in Ghana, but it also assists in us building capacity in international education here at Chicago State. And as we move forward, the phase two, which is also under the direction or the coordination of Dr. Kuhungu here at Chicago State, the analysis timeline we've actually begun, but we plan to be finished by November the 30th with final documents to submit to USAID by December 30th of this year. Now, as we move forward, well, let me just do it the way that I have written it, because I know I get a little carried away sometimes. But the cost for both phases was about $250,000. There are other activities that emanate from this from phase one of the assessment. And the six students who from Chicago State who were trained as field researchers, they coined a phrase, "I see me and you." And that phrase is being used to produce a photo journal, which we went to the printer yesterday, that everyone will receive. We have about 500 copies that will be distributed. The CSU field researchers are going to Los Angeles in October for the Association of Black Women in Higher Education Conference to do a workshop. And the title of the workshop is "I See Me and You" as well. It's
can you tell me who's all the travel that you're talking about? Who's paying for that?
The grant.
The grant is that travel, and that's a lot of travel.
It is.
I mean, you
lot
took
of
six students to Ghana, mm-hmm. along with some staff, and now you're taking a trip to L.A.
Yes.
Okay.
It's all approved.
Okay.
I have approvals, and okay. I submit them with my travel authorizations,
okay.
and I submit them through, as
okay.
I explained to you earlier, through the financial systems, mm-hmm. Checks and balances mm-hmm. within the framework of the university. But those approvals come from the United States Department of United States Agency for International.
Okay. I just wanted to know where the money was coming from. With Mr. Meek sitting here, I just want to.
No.
I was looking for every dollar he could claim. So,
but one of the things about USAID, they're very interested in students.
Okay.
A part of it is that they want students to become international, global thinkers and workers. They are looking for students to go into international development. And I think as a result of this, I can't tell you that any one of the six students that we have will do that, but their awareness and their passion for this area has increased. And at any board meeting or at any juncture, I can bring in students to attest to that. And I think you'll see that once we're able to distribute the ICU and Me photo journal, because their lives were changed by that.
Excuse me.
Yes.
The students who spend time in Ghana, is that able to count as an internship or something like that they can put on their resume or curriculum vitae?
The situation with those six students, they were identified as study abroad students before I took on the leadership of the textbooks and learning materials program. However, nowhere, and we couldn't figure out how they were going to be paid, how we were going to pay for them to go to Ghana. And so the idea, because we knew we were going to do some level of assessment, I reached out to USAID Washington and asked to develop the students as field researchers so that we can, under the grant, pay for those students' experience. Because if not, they would have been very disappointed. Those students had been engaged in classes, so they are receiving academic credit for their experience. Started back in January through ended in July. They will receive academic credit.
And I might add that one of the students is a doctoral student, and he is doing his dissertation on this particular project.
We have two students at Chicago State currently who are using this project for their dissertation. And one will be presenting their preliminary proposal this evening
today,
at 4 o'clock.
At 4.
I have a couple of questions.
Yes.
I'm not sure if you're done yet, but...
Well, I can answer
okay, let me
your
think.
Question.
I realize this program was decided to be done before I came onto the board. And so the questions I ask you are not well informed. They're just questions I've had. And one is about money and one is about student learning. I know Trustee Hill mentioned earlier that the question we should always be asking ourselves is, how are we supporting student learning? And so you've answered that to a certain extent, that you have six students, and it builds capacity for international education here at CSU. Well, that also then relates to the money question. How much of the CSU budget, time, effort, energy goes into this program that might be better spent in another way? And kind of relating that to the student question, or just generally, what is the benefit to CSU to do this program in addition to this? And then the student question would be, there are 7,300 and some students in CSU. Is six students a number worth all the energy effort that we are putting into this program? And I don't know who can answer this question, but it's been on my mind.
Well, let me say that at this point, possibly in the past, this may not have been the situation, a consideration for impact on student learning. This is the first year that we've involved students in the project. So definitely the direction is toward making a greater impact on student learning. So to answer your question, definitely, I'm in my mind, it is a benefit to the university right now, and it will continue to be an extensive benefit to the university when you look at it in terms of the international efforts, the international awareness among students. Not only are we doing this and having the students present, but the goal is, of course, to have campus-wide presentations and get additional students involved. And knowing that USAID is very much supportive of this effort, and we definitely plan to request additional funds, or maybe request reallocation of funds so that we can support students to a greater extent as it is related to having an impact on what they learn and how they learn here at the university.
So is all the cost then covered by your grant? Or are there expenses that we incur in addition?
Yes, you may.
Yeah, this is a cost reimbursable grant. In other words, we pay up front and then we bill UAS. We receive the dollars back.
Okay.
That way, so that's basically it. So it's not costing us any additional dollars.
To put this grant in context, up until about last year, probably about February, this grant was pretty much an island within itself, within the university. Yes. It had some bridges to a couple of academic departments, but nothing really solid. It operated totally outside of. And I think it was February, please correct me on the date, about February or March last year, we made some, you might say, some rather drastic changes within the governance of the program. And one change that we made some personnel changes, but the other change is that we put it within the College of Education. Okay. And there was a reason for that. And it goes back to what Trustee Hill said earlier, and that is everything we must do must be connected to learning. So when we put it in the College of Education, had a talk with the dean, and I said, make sure that this benefits the educational process and the learning process of our students as much as possible. So now, I think the dean may have had it maybe for 5 months. So she's just now getting her arms wrapped around it. Yeah. And trying to see how we ensure that this is a grant of about $11 million. How this grant that has been in existence for, what, 5 years, 6 years, that has almost had its own culture within itself, how this grant now is integrated into an educational unit and how students will benefit. So that's the intent. That's the foundation that has been laid. And Dean Gist is currently working that out. Have I stated that correctly, Dean?
You have.
Well, yes. I could see it being connected to other departments as well.
Oh.
And that would be in the future, I would assume, is certainly if you're going for additional funds.
No.
And I guess my next question would be, what would you anticipate a critical number of students participating? A class, 20, 30, 50, 100 students participating? I mean.
Well, I think one of the greater benefits that I've touched upon but we've not discussed, how students benefit comes through the quality of the teaching and the training of the faculty. And we, right now, we've touched upon the lives of, or the training of probably, I know of in my short tenure, we had three major faculty with us with the evaluation. We employ faculty to do the editing, and also from the very beginning, they've done a lot of the work on the creation of the workbooks and teachers' guides. And so if they're being trained properly, or if they have these experiences and exposures to strengthen their abilities, that will also filter down to the students that they work with.
Mm-hmm. But I'd like to think that would be an intentional thing.
Yes.
That they would be directed,
yes,
to include the students. Because I do see potential for this mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. Political science and so
the
many
sciences,
different things.
Well, you know,
I mean, even the environment. Mm-hmm. You know, the
well,
African
right.
and the... You know, so I think if there's a future like that, then I support this and I look forward to that.
And we've
right,
also
trustee.
Passed over into CMAT with a partnership. Well, I won't call it a partnership, but an arrangement where they are creating a video for us to present to USAID. And that's one of the direct, will be one of the direct deliverables to USAID, and it's also a part of my report that should be finalized by next week. We've also asked Dr. Watson's office to have Dr. Watson be our introduction person in our video.
Oh, okay.
And they're supposed to get back to us, because we do have these other VCs, these other presidents of universities mm-hmm. involved, and we want it to have a presence, Dr. Watson's presence.
And
well.
I will answer, yes, I will do the introduction.
Yeah,
but,
trying to work out the schedule.
But let me add to that. The question that the trustee is asking is, you know, is very intricate to a higher learning commission mm-hmm. and a whole learning process. That is our intent. That is where we're going. Now, the reason why we placed it in the College of Education, just to be quite honest, I had to have someone I could hold responsible. I had to hold someone I could hold accountable, and that's the dean of the College of Education. Now, that does not limit its sphere of influence to the other colleges. We're going to work with the colleges, arts and sciences, with the African American Studies Department, with a number of different departments where those students will be given an opportunity. But I can't hold four deans responsible for one grant. I got to have one person who signs off. The auditor wants one person who he's going to be looking for as a signature for signing it off, not four deans. So we want to hold someone who's academic, who has an academic title, accountable. Now, the other piece is that a number of universities have set a goal. Some universities now have as many as 32% of their entire student body that are traveling globally every year. Every year, 32% of the total student body. We are not close to that. I would love to get us to 10%, where if 10% of our students could travel every year to Africa, to Salzburg, to Salamanca, to England, it will be immensely valuable to the learning process. But it's not for just the purpose of travel. It must be intricately tied into the curricula that our faculty are putting forward. Yeah. Dr. Mario Beatty, and you know, Dean Lindsay, we need to probably bring Mario Beatty and the students who just got back from Egypt forward and make a presentation to the board, because that's a true example of how travel to a country was tied to the curricula and how a faculty member provided that leadership. It was absolutely, it was one of those moments that changed people's lives.
I can see. Well, thank you. Actually, you've convinced me that this is potentially a wonderful program. It's already doing great things. And I just want to emphasize the culture aspect of it and the relationship to this university with the African American Studies program. And the connection to Africa is just such a wonderful thing to be able, for the community as a whole, as well as the university.
But please note that it is my intent and the administration's intent that this, that we reach out to Salzburg, Austria, that we reach out to Salamanca, Spain, that our students, the diversity of the understanding, a diversity of culture should be one of our primary goals.
Good point.
Because that's an educated person. You know, I don't want to just send individuals to Africa because this is a predominantly black institution. An educated person is one who understands multiple cultures. So we must send them to numerous countries.
Right.
Excuse me.
Just to add some background information for you, Trustee Samuels, the original goal of this project was part of the previous administration at the national level. Previous administration's initiative to put a textbook in the hands of every child in Africa. So I was involved in the initial needs assessments as far as this project is concerned, and it was determined that in Ghana there was a need for a number of needs, but the most pressing need was environmental studies. So one, this is relating to your interest in taking it over to the sciences. So one of the textbooks, or the first textbook that we developed, was for the kindergarten level, KG1, KG2, and it was an environmental studies textbook. The next level, of course, will be primary 1, primary 2, primary 3, which we're currently writing those textbooks. And so, therefore, the sciences will be involved in the environmental studies aspect of it.
Can
so
I
there are
those?
Initiatives.
Could I get copies of those textbooks?
Oh, sure.
I would very much like to see them.
Sure, definitely.
Excuse me. Just out of curiosity, what exactly was the field research done, and what type of data was collected in the program? What type of, you made reference to the field work and the data collected through interviews and observations while they were in Ghana, and I would like to know what exactly was the field research that was done, and what data was collected as a result of that research?
Okay, there were interviews that were conducted with parents of you know, the students, teachers, there were observations of classrooms, you know, classroom teaching. There were, prior to all of that, certainly there were instruments that were created. And these, field researchers, and well, all the researchers went out and they collected the data based on the instruments that had been created.
Just to add to that, a full-fledged proposal was developed. It was approved through our Institutional Research Board here. It was also approved through the Ghana Ministry of Education. There are a number of assessment instruments looking at various populations, but particularly three populations, which of course would include the parents, the students, not the students, we didn't include them, the teachers, and the administrators. And so they went out and they did interviews, collected this data, they will triangulate this data and present the report. I'm sorry.
But in terms of the interviews, what were they looking for?
Right. Okay.
Were they looking for to see whether or not the books were actually being...
Oh, they were looking, yes, that's they primarily the use of the books. Are the books being used? Are they in the classroom? Are they in the students' hands? And you know, and this is totally not a part of the analysis, but I was there during the period and talking to the teams when they go come, they would return, and they saw our books. They saw our books more so than they saw other books, and I think that's going to be one of the one of the findings of the analysis once it's completed.
And I think what also will help frame it is, sometimes when you have initiatives like this that are being funded from USAID, what we found was that although the dollars were allocated to do certain projects within the schools, sometimes when you would go into those schools, you would find that the monies were not spent on the things they were intended. But through these observations and actually going into the fields, they could see firsthand when they're interviewing with parents, when they're interviewing with teachers, that indeed the books are being used, but also it serves as an opportunity to find out what additional assistance may be needed. Maybe it needs an additional workbook, but that would be an opportunity where it would, you know, provide that information.
And that actually is a question that I've had too. Are these in English? And
yes.
Is there English being taught in all these schools?
Well, let me kind of do that. From KG1, which is kindergarten, first year kindergarten through primary three, education is done in the mother tongue. It's taught in the mother tongue. There are supposed to be materials that teach the students in the mother tongue. However, our books, what makes them so unique is that they are the supplement that teachers in KG1 through 3, or P3, introduce English concepts, academic concepts in English to students. They're not the primary books, are not supposed to be the primary books that are used. Okay, they're to be as supplements to introduce, because once a student goes into primary 4, all education is done in English.
Really?
So these books are used to introduce those concepts. As well, they're supposed to be taken home. They're consumables. And, you know, so we have other issues related to that. And, I don't think that this is the place to really go into that. But one thing, we talked about capacity building in the College of Education. One of the things that we, you know, and based on our U.S. Aid Cooperative Agreement, teacher training is the next focus that they're looking for us to partner with and do in 2010 and 11 academic year. And in recent discussions with my Ghanaian partners and the CSU dean, my dean, Dr. Gist, it is anticipated that we will be doing teacher training this coming year, using various approaches, as well as it being done here at Chicago State and in Ghana. One of the things that I'm very excited about is the university. It's a resurgence of interest from the university community in Ghana to use our textbooks in their teaching, in their early childhood development courses, as well as teaming with us to identify individuals to send to the U.S. For teacher training and to work in Ghana in teacher training. And it is my hope that Chicago State can develop a CSU graduate certificate program in early childhood development for some of the Ghanaian individuals. Early childhood development is a new area or initiative. It's a phenomenon for Ghana and for most of the sub-Saharan countries because it's never been mandated up until just very recent years. So.
Okay, I think we're going to have to
move on. Okay,
I
know.
Thank you for the discussion, but
I understand.
The time is winding down for us.
Okay.
Well, we appreciate your report and we appreciate your leadership on this project.
Thank you.
To make us an ambassador to the world.
Thank you.
At least to Africa, at least. We're now moving on to the athletics.
Good afternoon, board.
Good morning.
Sudie Davis, the athletic director. I have a CSU athletic update for you, which you've had, but I want to expound on it just a little bit. In our athletic plan last year, we talked about some bold strokes that we needed to do here at Chicago State to be successful in our playing, as well as some other things in athletics. One of those major steps was to bring in a coach who could probably get the job done for us that we were looking to do in athletics and academics at Chicago State. We selected a Mr. Tracy Dildy. Mr. Dildy is a Illinois Hall of Famer. Mr. Dildy has coached at about three institutions, DePaul, Illinois, and Ball State. Mr. Tracy is very, very responsible for 14 pro players coming out of Illinois to go through college and then be recruited by pro players. But also, he is a great recruiter. He is a great coach. And I think that stimulus in our basketball program is what we need, and we're hoping you guys come out and see him. He's doing a great job. Along with Mr. Dildy, we wanted to do something in strength and conditioning. We brought in a Mr. Michael Bobelski, who was here a long time ago. Once he left Chicago State, his career exploded. He worked with some pro baseball teams, basketball teams. We got him back. He is doing an outstanding job with our teams. My president walked over and caught him with the basketball team. He was kind of excited. And I had to let him know he's not only working with basketball, he's working with the entire athletic department. So all our teams are doing very well in that area. Mr. Dildy brought along with him two assistant coaches, Mr. Sean Pryor, who is another young man from Chicago who recruited Chicago very, very well. He went down, I think he was in Missouri. He took about five kids from Chicago and had an outstanding program. So he along with Mr. Dildy, and we already had Mr. James Farr, from who's a player who was back from Mount Carmel, who's another outstanding recruiter. Those three people have really worked hard this summer. In my office, I've had about eight of the top basketball players in Chicago and their families in my office to talk about Chicago State University. That's the first time that's happened here in years. So I just wanted to bring that up. The other piece we brought in, which was a bold stroke, was Mr. Bob Askew, who's working with women's volleyball. Women's volleyball has made a drastic change, a turnaround. I think next year, I've looked at his recruits that he's bringing in. I think they're going to be a very strong team to deal with, not only in our conference, but also in the surrounding area. Mr. Askew is a volleyball coach who came from Bloom High School. He is a coach who has been involved with all the suburban volleyball teams and clubs in Illinois and Mid-America. And getting him here was another great move because he's a Pied Piper for volleyball, and that's what we need here. What we did this year was take a different recruiting approach to our student athletes we were bringing in. Each team has a administrator, athletic administrator that the coach reports to, and that athletic administrator reports to me. So once these coaches were out recruiting, it was their job to bring in their student profiles back to us. We had a meeting and we had to look at these students, not only on their playing ability, but on the academic side, because we're really concerned with the academics of our athletes, making sure we retain them and they graduate. And if we had any that were Michael Jordan, as someone says around here, we wanted to make sure that we had the support mechanisms in place to see if we could take that risk to make sure that that student gets through Chicago State University. So in front of you, you have the efforts of the coaches to recruit players, and I think they did an excellent job. So those are the names, and I'm not going to go through all of them, but you have them in front of you. But I'll just say volleyball brought in 5, men's basketball brought in 5, men's golf brought in 3, women's golf 2, tennis brought in 1 outstanding player, baseball brought in 17, men's cross country brought in 2, and women's cross country brought in 4. And I think we had a pretty good recruiting year this year. The other thing that you have on your in front of you, Chicago State men's tennis team got a NCAA high merit academic honor by being in the top 10 percentile of the academic teams in the country in NCAA. So we were presented with a letter, and we have that recognition. I think there was only 2 other teams, 2 other schools that had similar things in Illinois come to them. So that's a high honor for us to be on that level. Last weekend, we had some outstanding things. We had a young man who ran a cross-country meet at Northern Illinois University who won the entire meet, Matthew Jordan. He is an outstanding student. That was a big thing for Chicago State to go to an Invitational, and he crossed the line about 20 yards in front of everybody. We had Miss Peggy Moore, who played in the Northern Illinois University Invitational Tournament tennis, and she cleaned out the whole place. She's an outstanding student here also. So those 2 highlights we started off with this year, which really made us feel good. Then our women's golf team played a crosstown rival tournament that they have every year called a shootout with Loyola University, and we beat Loyola University Saturday. Then the women's golf team turned around, had a 14-team tournament, which was Sunday and Monday. And out of that tournament, we thought they came in 4th, dot, but we found out there were some discrepancies. They came in 5th, but they did an outstanding job. So we're starting to roll in the right direction. Our student athletes are very excited. We're doing some new things. We've just opened the fitness center with the help of our president, and our students are so excited, and we're hoping that all of you guys come over there and use that center. We have a few administrators that's working out with Meeks, and they're doing an outstanding job, but there will be a grand opening in October, but you need to come over and get involved. The other thing that we have on tap right now is the JDC gym. I don't know if you've been there. The gym floor has been redone. I think as of today, Mr. President, I think about 3 or 4 more rows need to be put up for our bleachers, and that should look like a brand new facility there. The baseball team was blessed with President Dr. Akrajazi, who's in the back there, my buddy, and we just built 2 new batting cages for our baseball teams, which is something that we had complaints last year about not having enough facilities. But we've gotten together with President Akazazi, and we've come up with an excellent facility, which will be finished probably by Tuesday. But that ends my report. Any questions?
I have one question. It's in regards to the new athletes. What exactly is the percentage or the number of athletes that will be receiving or have been told that they'll be receiving in-house scholarships? And with our the deficit that we're facing, will we be able to honor these scholarships?
Yes, we have. Well, if you look at the numbers of baseball, you probably say, wow, that's 17. Well, baseball don't get full scholarships, so they only get about 1/4 of a scholarship. That's the NCAA mandate. And our scholarship level right now, we can't maintain. We have 134 athletes, and I say about out of the 100, well, maybe 37. Out of 137, I would say about 124 of them all have scholarships at some denomination. Not all. We don't give, we have a few full scholarships. But percentages like baseball, those guys basically pay for 3/4 of their own education. And we pay the other quarter.
But they are guaranteed, even if it's half or a fourth, that it will be covered?
Oh, yeah, it's covered.
Okay.
Everything's covered.
I have a question, which is part of the plan that you presented was dealt with the financial aspects of managing the athletics program and beginning to raise monies from other sources. Do you have an update on that?
What we've done this year right now, we have a couple of deals on the table. But one of the things we did, I think last year, our basketball program brought in about $180,000. This year, with the new coach, and we will be playing DePaul, we will be playing Loyola, these other schools here. We are approximately going to bring in $660,000 this year. And that's basketball guarantees that will be up significantly from last year.
I think it would be helpful to see an update compared to what was projected and where we stand and make sure that.
And all of those are contracted. Those are contracted dollars. So.
But I think what trustee's asking for is a written, given the plan that you propose, that should be just a.
Are we on track with that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Just, yeah. But a written report that shows how we're working to the plan.
We can get that to you. Anything else? Thank you.
Thank you.
I think we're at the child care center. That was taken off the agenda?
That was taken off the agenda.
Okay, hold on, let me look at the updated agenda.
Child care.
In the, we heard from the Office of Grants and Research. Have we?
Hello again. Yvonne Harris, for the record, reporting for the Office of Grants and Research Administration. Here to give you an update for the period of July 1, 2010 to August 24, 2010. The total grants received for that period was $34.4 million. And if taking a look at the pie chart data that was given, you can see the breakdown of that with respect to federal and state versus student aid. Federal and state grants of that represented about a federal $7.25 million we received from the federal and about $27.13 million came from state. The projected indirect costs from the federal side was about $148,180. Of the federal grants that were given to CSU, you'll see that the U.S. Department of Education and the Department of Health and Human Services were the major grant agencies. Of the state, most of those grants we received was from the Department of, DCEO. The Pell Grant represented most of the student aid grants we received, and that was a total of $34.4 million. And that is the bulk of my report for that period.
Are there any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
At this time, we'll take public or employee comments. Seeing none?
Move that we adjourn.
Second the motion.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Kerr?
Yes.
Trustee Samuels?
Yes.
Trustee Lisa Morrison Butler?
Yes. Thank you.